to Tuned 2 Yesterday, showcasing programs from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Livonier, bringing you an hour of crime. Later on, it's the Mole Mystery Theater from 1948, but right now, a tale of true crime on The Big Story. This episode, number 58 in the series from NBC, from May 5th, 1948, called Pillars of Society, showcasing William Miller of the Cleveland Press. And if you're a fan of radio character actors, this episode hosts impressive performances by actors who took on two roles in the same broadcast. Among them, Arnold Moss, Barbara Weeks, Adelaide Klein, Edwin Jerome, Jack Grimes, and Santos Ortega.
The Big Story.
You ready, Mama? Is the store locked?
Just closing the back door. You're finished,
yep.
Now?
Busy week, good week.
And the money?
In the valise, ready for deposit first thing in the morning.
Mm-hmm. Oh, a customer. It's too late.
No, it's not too late. Maybe he needs something. Wait, I'll...
Oh, it's two customers, Sal, two men.
Two is better than one. Come in, gentlemen, come in. What can I...
You're an old guy, Pop. I wouldn't want to hurt you. But if I had to, I would.
You want to...
The valise, Pop, the valise.
No, I... We're totally... You're not rich.
Frank, maybe he doesn't understand polite talk. Now, give me that valise. Frank, talk to the man so he'll be sure and understand.
The Big Story. Here is America, its sound and its fury, its joy and its sorrow, as faithfully reported by the men and women of the great American newspapers. Cleveland, Ohio. From the pages of the Cleveland, Ohio Press, the moving story of justice and a guy named Joe. Tonight, to William Miller of the Cleveland, Ohio Press, goes the Pall Mall Award for The Big Story. The story as it actually happened. William Miller's story as he lived it. Cleveland, Ohio.
You sit at your desk, William Miller of the Cleveland Press, writing the story of a brutal holdup. A man and a woman, both in their 60s, owners of a small dry goods store on East 102nd Street, have been beaten and robbed. The sum taken, $2,000, represents 10 years' savings for their kind of people. Their attackers were kids, 119, 121, to whom money is the final goal, and to whom a storekeeper and his wife are just two people in the way. You write that bitter news story, and 2 months later you write with satisfaction that one of the robbers was sentenced to 15 years in jail. The other robber was never picked up, but you're happy with the one they got. You enter his name in the back of your mind under the category Louse. Joe Mantell, Louse. That done, you forget about him. Until 4 months later, the phone on your desk jogs you back into remembrance.
Miller speaking.
Receptionist, Mr. Miller. There's an old woman out here to see you.
Well, who is she? What does she want?
Wouldn't say.
Ask her name. I'm busy.
Yes, sir. What is your name? Thank you. Mrs. Mantell, Mr. Miller.
Mantell? I don't know any... Oh, Joe Mantell. She anything to do with him?
His mother, Mr. Miller.
What do you know? Yeah, send her in. I'd like to hear what she's got to say. Yeah, send her in.
You're very kind to see me, Mr. Miller.
You read the stories I wrote on your son, didn't you, Mrs. Mantell?
Yes, I did.
Well, then you know just how I feel. I'm only sorry you didn't get 25 years.
I'm not a proud woman, Mr. Miller. If, to get to the truth, I have to scrub floors or take a little insult, a mother doesn't mind that, Mr. Miller.
Now, look. Now, what do you got to say?
Joey didn't do it any more than I did.
The jury thought otherwise.
Joey wasn't there. He wasn't near the store that night.
Now, you said that in court.
I know I did.
Well, what do you want anyhow? A man gets a trial, a fair trial, a jury of decent, honest people find him guilty. What more do you want?
Mr. Miller, I'm a reader of your paper 15 years. I like the way you write.
I know all that.
No, that's not flattery. It's the truth. You remember the Sullivan boy about 8 years ago, Mr. Miller? He was found guilty by a jury of honest people, too, but you wrote about it, and you helped prove that he was innocent. And the Ginsburg girl, that was about 4 years
ago. Look, I studied your son's case. The only thing that makes me sore was that they didn't catch the other crook, and your son only got 15 years. Those people were in their 60s, Mrs. Mantell.
I'm 67, Mr. Miller. At 67, a woman don't lie. My boy was home in the garage fixing the car.
Why was he fixing a car in the evening?
Because when a boy wants to make a new start, he don't care if it's afternoon or evening.
Meaning what?
Joseph Mantell, my son, was a bad boy. And it's a mother saying that, Mr. Miller. When he was 16, he stole a car. At 18, he robbed a candy store. So, of course, any jury would say that at 19, he'd hold up another store and steal $2,000.
And beat up the storekeeper and his wife. I'd say the same thing.
You see, the night of the robbery, he was going away. I got $300 together, all I could spare. You see, my husband is dead. And we bought Joey a second-hand car, and he was going away. I was sitting on the steps that night, and he was in the garage fixing the car.
What's California like, Ma?
Oh, it's nice, Joey. A boy could, well, he could find himself there.
You don't know me, Ma. I got 2 strikes against me.
If he tries hard, he could find himself.
Ma, sometimes I think when they handed out luck, I was out for a beer.
Now, don't make smart jokes, Joey.
Okay. They must have seen you coming when they sold you this jalopy.
It'll get you to California, and that's all I want. Look, Joey, people in California never heard of you.
I know. No, it's not so easy. Cops heard of me, Ma. And other kinds of people, too. Don't kid yourself.
But you got nothing to be ashamed of. You did your time for the wrong things that you did. You'll go there and make a new start.
Yeah, sure. Who knows? Maybe I'll be the next Van Johnson. Joe Mantell in Home on a Range, playing at your...
What is it, Joey?
Okay, Mantell. Come along.
What's the matter? Officer, what's happened?
Didn't he tell you?
No.
You'll find out. Let's go. The sergeant is waiting for you, Mantell. And the judge and a jury. And I think there'll be a nice, comfortable cell, too. Now, come on.
That's the God's truth, Mr. Miller. He was going away to turn over a new leaf, too.
Okay, Mrs. Mantell, I heard you. Now, if you'll excuse me, I got a lot of work to do. 3 witnesses saw him.
Maybe Joey was right. 2 strikes against you, he said. Chances are, you strike out.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Take that door out, will you, Mrs. Mantell? I'm not a charitable institution, and I'm not a dope either.
And that's all. You close your mind to it. Happens every day. Every crook with a mother is innocent. You go back to the real world of being an honest reporter, and then something happens, and you realize that you haven't shaken the Mantell case from your mind because...
You write this story, Smitty?
Yeah, why?
About the 2 guys that held up the gas station?
Told you I did. Something the matter?
No, nothing. Just... But did you see the crooks?
Sure I saw them. Hey, what's eating you?
Well, just this. The 2 criminals, Bud and Frank Enright, 19 and 21... In addition to robbing the attendant, beat him cruelly as well. The injuries may prove fatal because the attendant was a man well in his 60s.
So?
Well, nothing. Just reminds me of another case. I just wonder if... Nah, 3 witnesses couldn't be wrong. The jury couldn't be that wrong. Nah. Or could they? Hey, Smitty, what... jail are those 2 crooks in? Sergeant, can I see this Bud Enright?
Sure. It's a free country. What's the point, Miller?
Well, I just... Just that I want to make sure I didn't insult an old lady.
Huh? I don't know what you're talking about, but go ahead. Go as far as you like. Only leave him in the cooler, will you?
Look like him. You know that, don't you?
Like who?
Like Joe Mantell.
Who's he?
The boy who was sent up for beating and robbing a couple who ran a dry goods store on East 102nd Street 6 months ago.
So what? I look like him.
Did you do that job?
Don't be stupid.
Now, look, Bud, you're in a bad way. You may get life. You know that, don't you?
Look, get out of here. I got a right to be alone.
You and your brother stuck up that couple, didn't you?
Yes. Yeah, we stuck them up and tipped the cops to pick up this Mantell.
Now, what do you got to lose? Tell the truth. Maybe an innocent kid is up for 15 years for what you did.
My heart's bleeding. Now, get out of here and leave me alone. What kind of jail is this, anyhow? Anybody can come in here and say anything he wants. Leave me alone.
Jenkins, you identified this man as the robber of the dry goods store?
Look, young man, I testified to that effect in court. I don't see
and
why...
And this is the man, isn't it? This is his picture?
That's right. Now, if you don't mind,
this is not Joe Mantell.
What?
That's right. This is Bud Enright, not Joe Mantell.
But I...
Then you're not sure it was Mantell who held up that store. It might have been this man.
Yes,
sir. Thanks. That's all I wanted to know. Is this the man, Mrs. Smothers?
This one? Oh, it certainly is. I'd know his face anywhere. He came in our store just...
Well, this is not the man your testimony convicted, Mrs. Smothers. This is another man.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness, that's terrible. You're sure?
I told you I didn't do it, Miller. Why are you going to leave me alone?
Enright, I've got affidavits from three witnesses saying you were the man, not Mantell. From the storekeepers, too. Now, why don't you stop it? You're going to get life anyhow. Play ball. Maybe something can be done.
I don't want any part of it.
Now, look, maybe it's a stupid thing to say, Enright, but how about a little thing like your conscience? How about a little thing like that fact that this kid's mother is sick to death because... Enright, I swear I'm going to haunt you till you tell me the truth. I'm going to...
All right. All right, shut up.
I got a statement right here. Now read it. And read it carefully.
Okay, let me see it.
Well, there it is, Commissioner. The works. Signed confession by Enright, affidavits of error by the witnesses, and now all you have to do is see the governor.
Suppose we go slow, Miller.
What do you mean slow? Everything's right here in front of you, Commissioner.
Sure, sure. What is the confession of a life term worth? What did you offer him to sign? It's sympathetic treatment in your paper? No. Feed a little sentiment to most crooks, they'll oblige you. What have they got to lose? That confession isn't worth the paper it's written on.
What about the affidavits of the witnesses? What about Mrs. Smothers, who owned the store?
What? That they made a mistake? That they said Enright was Mantell? I could get them to say Mantell was Enright, or maybe somebody else. Maybe instead of making one mistake, they're making two mistakes. What proof have you got? Real proof. Absolute proof that would warrant our reversing a jury.
But this man is innocent.
I know. An innocent man is in prison. Makes a great story. But how does this one strike you? A guilty man is pardoned. How do you like that story?
Mantell didn't do it. He was fixing his car that night. He was going to California.
A jury thought otherwise. 12 honest men and women, as honest as you or I. They thought otherwise. You think you've got enough to throw that decision away?
Now look, in the Sullivan case, in the Ginsburg case...
Oh, sure. You batted 1,000 there. Only this time you might be batting zero. Nothing you've shown me would make the governor give Mantell a pardon. Nothing. I want proof, Miller, proof. Maybe this will sound high-handed to you, but it happens to be my philosophy, and the philosophy of the courts of this country. A jury has the last word. Trial by jury is the pillar of decency and law. You don't throw that over for a whim or an idea, or even because a smart reporter comes in and presents you with something that indicates maybe, just maybe, something is wrong. Think that over, Miller. But any time you want to speak to me again, come right in. I'm honest, but I'm hard-headed. You'll be the same.
You walk out of the commissioner's office, slowly weighing his words. Because you're just a reporter, Bill Miller. A reporter for the Cleveland Press. You think over what he said, that courts and trial by jury are the pillars of our society. And you know he has a point, a big point. And so, as you move ahead now, you look for proof. Proof that'll be important enough to reverse a decision by a jury of 12 men and women, tried and true. Your first step is taken with a specialist, Dr. Thompson, an expert with a lie detector. You two sit down with Joe Mantell, and as the doctor gives him a test for truth, you can hear his heartbeat.
Now, just relax, Mr. Mantell, if you please, and answer the questions I'll ask you.
Yes. Yes, sir.
Are you innocent?
Yes, sir, doctor, I am.
Where were you on the night of the robbery?
Fixing my car.
What kind of car was it?
A Chevy. Convertible.
How many times were you convicted before?
Twice. Both times for robbery.
But this time you're innocent.
Yes, sir, I'm innocent. I never...
Very well. Mrs. Smothers, the storekeeper, said you hit her husband on the head.
That's a lie. I never did. I wouldn't hit a man old enough to be my father.
All right, Mr. Mantell, that'll do. That'll do very nicely. Now, just sit still, Enright. This is a lie detector.
I signed your statement, didn't I? What do you got to bother me with all this for?
Just answer the questions and nothing's going to happen to you.
All right, Mr. Miller, I'm ready. Now, Mr. Enright, describe what happened when you went into the store.
I walked in, me and my brother. They wouldn't hand over the money, so I took it. They had it in a little valise.
And then you hit him.
Frank hit him. We wanted to be sure they wouldn't call the cops.
And then you walked out?
And we put out the lights and then walked out.
How much money was in the valise?
$2,000. Ain't that enough?
Your brother says you hit him.
Then he's a liar. A dirty liar.
All right, Mr. Enright. Fine. Thank you.
Now, do me a favor, Miller. Get that Mantell punk out of jail and leave me alone.
I'll try, bud. I'll try.
The tests, Commissioner, establish, in my judgment, the innocence of Joseph Mantell and demonstrate that Bud Enright was telling the truth when he admitted the robbery.
I see.
Well, what do you say, Commissioner?
Lie detectors are funny things. Tell me, Doctor, how do you explain this chart, the wild beatings and vibrations during Mantell's testimony, if he was telling the truth?
Well, he's young and excitable, and anyone would have such reactions.
Then they're not conclusive. He might have had the same reactions if he were lying.
Well...
Commissioner Enright's chart shows that he wasn't lying.
Not to me, it doesn't.
Well, why doesn't it?
Because... Check me on this, Doctor. The lie detector breaks down when it comes to hardened criminals. I mean a man with a record who over a period of years has built himself up to lie evenly. Such a man could fool a lie detector, right?
Well, there would be some difficulty in such a case.
Read Enright's record, Miller. 7 major crimes in 6 years. Everything from smuggling to assault to arson to robbery. Such a man is constitutionally unable to distinguish between right and wrong.
But for heaven's sake, Commissioner...
I still see a jury of 12 people deliberating in a closed room, settling the fate of a man. I don't see this kind of half evidence changing what went on in that room.
Well, what do you want?
I want a reason. A better reason than you've given me for reversing a jury.
You write articles in your paper, Bill Miller. Articles pointing out the validity of your case. You call upon outstanding citizens to rally around the innocence of Joe Mantell. You bring support to your case in the person of the most respectable citizens of Cleveland. And then you go to see the commissioner once more.
No, I won't change my mind.
Well, you... Now, look, this has gone beyond the stage of reasonable doubt. Here are the names of 200 of the most prominent citizens of Cleveland.
I was just as impressed with the names of the witnesses and the storekeeper's wife. Size doesn't change this. And the importance of the people who signed doesn't change it. They didn't sit on that jury. They didn't hear all the evidence.
Well, suppose I got the jurors themselves. Would that change your mind?
Get there. How could you do that? That jury was impaneled over a year ago. A lot of those people are... Who knows? All over the state. Maybe some out of the state. How could you get them?
Well, suppose I did. What would you say then?
You really believe in this, don't you?
just as much as you believe in the sanctity of the courts.
If you'll get the jury, Miller, I'll get you some action from the governor.
Now you've said something, Bill Miller. You're going to get the jury to reverse themselves. And in saying it, you've said a mouthful. Because just as the commissioner thought, half the jurors can't be located easily. Some have moved to other cities, some to other states. But you go after them. You reach them wherever they are and present the testimony of the witnesses. You show them the photos. You bring in the lie detector tests. And finally, after a year of hard work, you've got 11 jurors agreeing that Joe Mantell should be pardoned. But 11 isn't 12. And the 12th juror, Mrs. Anna Ryder, can't be found anywhere. And then your phone rings.
Miller speaking.
Mr. Miller, this is Mrs. Mantell.
Oh, hello, Mrs. Mantell. How are you?
Oh, I'm fine. I'm fine. And I haven't had a chance yet to tell you how much I appreciate all that you've done.
That's all right, Mrs. Mantell. I wish I... Well, you know, I haven't been able to finish what I started.
Yes, I know. I know. Mrs. Ryder, the 12th juror...
Yeah, we can't find her anywhere.
But that's why I called you. I found her.
Yeah, we've done every... You found her? Well, where?
Oh, that's just it, Mr. Miller. She's very sick, and she's in the hospital.
Well, could we see her?
Well, I don't know. The doctor says her condition is very serious.
Well, give me the name of the hospital. Maybe we can do it, Mrs. Mantell. Maybe we can. And that's the story, Mrs. Ryder.
Thank you for coming. You see, I'm dying, Mr. Miller.
Oh, no, you're not.
Oh, yes, I know. But I thank you for coming. Always since I saw your first articles in the paper months ago, always there was a little cloud of doubt in my mind. And if I died with such a thing on my conscience...
Ah, now, you mustn't talk.
No. No, you see, his mother, this innocent boy's mother, she might have been me. No. No, Mr. Miller, I thank you for coming. You have a paper for me to sign? Give me the paper and bless you. Bless you for coming. I'm so glad you came, Mr. Miller. Joey is so happy since he was pardoned by the governor.
Well, I'm glad, too, Mrs. Mantell. It's a very nice party.
Yes, it's a coming-home party and a going-away party, too. Did you have some turkey?
Yes, thank you, I did. What do you mean, going away?
You haven't seen Joey, have you?
No, I was beginning to wonder where...
Well, he's out in the back, in the garage, fixing up the car. He said he don't want a party. He just wants to go away. He's changed, Mr. Miller, thanks to you. No chip on his shoulder now. No two strikes against him. Go out, Mr. Miller. Shake his hand and wish him luck. Joey would like that better than anything in the world.
In just a moment, we'll read you a telegram from William Miller of the Cleveland Press with the final outcome of tonight's big story. Now we read you that telegram from William Miller of the Cleveland, Ohio Press.
Couldn't write story of my meeting that day with Mantell. A little too personal, a little too private. But could tell that by way he said hi, useful life had been reclaimed. Feeling was justified when 2 years later received postcard from Mantell in California. He was happy, had a good job, doing well. Many thanks for tonight's Pall Mall Award.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. The makers of Pall Malls are proud to have named you the winner of the Pall Mall $500 Award for notable service in the field of journalism.
Listen again next week, same time, same station, when Pall Malls will present another big story. A big story from the front pages of the Indianapolis Star. Byline, Robert Early. a big story about racing cars, reckless men, and a driver who gambled and lost. Story is produced by Bernard J. Proctor with music by Vladimir Zelensky. Tonight's program was written by Arnold Pearl. Your narrator was Bob Sloan, and Arnold Moss played the part of William Miller. In order to protect the names of people actually involved in tonight's authentic big story, the names of all characters in the dramatization were changed, with the exception of the reporter, Mr. Miller. This is Ernest Chappell speaking for the makers of Pall Mall Famous Cigarettes.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
The Big Story, on Tuned 2 yesterday, NBC's 58th program in that series from May 5th, 1948. You're listening to An Hour of Crime on Tuned 2 Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark LeVonier. And now it's time for the Mole Mystery Theater from April 30th, 1948. Would the story make no mistake?
The Mole Mystery Theater, presented by M-O-L-L-E. Mole, the heavier brushless shaving cream for tough whiskers or a tender skin.
Good evening. This is Jeffrey Barnes, welcoming you to the Mole Mystery Theater, the program that presents the best in mystery and detective fiction. Henry Morgan, who was to have been with us tonight, will appear instead next week. Tonight, our story by Robert Mitchell and Gene Levitt is entitled Make No Mistake and stars Alan Baxter, well-known young actor of stage, screen, and radio, currently appearing in the hit motion picture Close Up. Will play the leading role of Dave.
I had to hang on to myself a little longer because I had one more thing to do. I had to see her. Had to get to Jeannie and tell her it was all a mistake, a hideous mistake. And I had to hurry because I knew the police were going to get me any minute now.
That's it, Jerry. You crossed against the light, Matt. What's the matter? Tired of living?
Tired of living? No. When you're 28 and in love, you're not tired of living. If you're going to die, it's for another reason, believe me. That's why I had to see Jeannie. Somehow I had to explain about the mistake. And that's what was driving me out of my mind. Even now, I couldn't look back and say just exactly where the mistake had been made. I couldn't tell. Even now, with death on his hands. Maybe this was a mistake, too. He's coming to see Jeannie, but I had to. I had to tell her. After that, whatever happened didn't matter. I went up the steps and opened the door. Rang an automatic chime someplace inside, so I closed the door and waited. The room was elegant and very quiet. In my mind, I'd always imagined Jeannie surrounded by beautiful stuff like this. I wanted to clear my throat, but in this place, it didn't seem quite right. Then Mr. Mundy came out.
May I help you, sir?
I'd like to see Jeannie, Mrs. Jean Kimball.
Oh, yes, and your name, sir?
I'm her husband, Dave Kimball.
Oh, I see. Step this way.
As I followed Mr. Mundy down the soundless corridor, I tried hard to think, to frame the words, because this is the last time I would ever see Jeannie. It was my last chance to explain, and it had to make sense. Maybe it happened that night a month ago. Maybe that's when the mistake was made. It was raining then, too, and business in the lunchroom was slow.
I was cleaning up the counter when I looked back toward the kitchen and saw Jeannie standing in the doorway.
Dave, I guess this is it.
Hey, we can't close up yet.
What's with the hat and coat? Quitting a little early, aren't you?
Judging by most marriages, I guess I am.
What was that? I didn't get that.
I'm leaving you, Dave. I'm going right now. I got a ticket to San Francisco. My train leaves in 40 minutes. It's got to be this way, Dave. Sharp and clean. Believe me, it's best. So it's... Bye-bye, Dave.
No. No, Jeannie. Wait a minute. You can't. You can't go.
Don't try to hold me.
But, Jeannie, why? You got to tell me why. You can't just leave like this all of a sudden for no reason. Give me a chance, Jeannie.
I have, Dave. I've given you a whole year of chances. You said if we got married, I'd learn to love you. You insisted on it. It was all your idea, not mine. And, well, it just hasn't worked out, that's all.
But it will, Jeannie. I know it will. Oh, baby, don't leave. Please, I love you, Jeannie. I'll do anything you say, Jeannie.
Oh, stop it. Don't crawl, Dave. Good grief, it isn't the end of the world. It happens every day. We tried it and it didn't work, so I'm getting out. No hard feelings, Dave, and no regrets, huh? Just goodbye and good luck, okay?
Will you write to me?
I don't think so.
But how are you going to live? What about money?
I'll get by. Make no mistake about that, Dave. Besides, it's not your worry anymore.
It'll always be my worry, Jean, always. Don't ever forget that. If you're ever in trouble, if you ever need me, just remember... Jean! Jeannie! She was gone, just like that. She walked out into the dark rain and was gone. I didn't think I could live without Jeannie. I loved her so much. But I lived. The days went by and the nights. Business picked up in the lunchroom, and I hired a fellow to help out, and things went along. They went along for almost a month, and then maybe that's when it happened, the mistake, because then she came back. I just happened to glance up one night, and there she was, sitting there watching me.
Hello, Dave.
Jeannie. Gee, what a surprise. Why, I never expected... Oh, Jeannie. Look, let's get out of here. Go someplace where we can talk.
All right, Dave.
Hey, Tommy, take over for me, will you?
Okay, Dave.
Come on, Jean. Well, you look just the same, Jean. You haven't changed.
Haven't I, Dave?
No, you look wonderful. I guess San Francisco agrees with you. How is it, Jean? Are you happy?
Oh, you know how San Francisco is. Hills and water and big bridges. But how have you been, Dave? In the house business?
Okay. I got a new helper, I suppose you noticed. And business has been a little better.
Oh, that's fine. I'm glad.
Jeannie, I've missed you. Missed you terribly. Every minute of every day. Sorry, I forgot you have an aversion to crawling things.
Oh, Dave, don't. That hurts. You see, I've come back.
Jean.
To stay if you want me.
If I wanted it, there was nothing in the world I wanted more. We picked up life where we dropped it a month ago, and at first it seemed as though she'd never been away. But then I began to detect it, the change. Jeannie was afraid. She was on guard, waiting for something to happen. Two nights later, just before closing time, it did. It happened. I was in the kitchen when the guy came in.
Sorry, mister. We're just closing.
Go ahead and close.
What do you want?
Cup of coffee?
Well, all right, as long as that's all you want.
Just coffee, that's all. For now, baby. Thanks. By the way, baby, where are you from?
What? Here. I'm right here. Why?
Oh, nothing. For a minute, you looked like somebody I knew once in San Francisco. You ever been in San Francisco, baby? Say, up around Fillmore Street?
Dave, that man out there.
What about him? Jeannie, what's the matter? You're white as a sheet.
I'm not feeling so good, Dave. Will you wait on that guy for me?
Well, sure, but... Hey, look, you sit down and take it easy. Hi, mister. You about finished with your coffee?
Where's the girl?
She's through for the night. We're closing up.
How about a refill on the coffee?
Look, mister, I said we're closing. We want to go get out of here and go home.
I'll bet you do. Where does the girl live?
She's a married woman. Now, I'm sorry, but you'll have to leave.
You mean you won't give me any more coffee? Is that what you mean?
That's right.
Okay, Chong. Okay.
Well, Jeannie, he's gone. Who was he? Did you... Jeannie, where are you? I don't even remember if I turned out the lights. I just locked the door and went home as fast as I could, and Jeannie was there in the apartment, throwing things into a suitcase. She stopped when I walked in and just stood there staring at me with a look in her eyes I'd never seen before, as though she expected me to step up and hit her right in the face.
Dave?
What are you doing, Jean? Why are you packing? Why did you run out tonight?
Dave, I've got to get out of here. I've got to leave town.
Now, wait a minute. This is getting to be a habit with you.
Oh, no, you don't understand.
Who was that big guy who came in? Did you know him?
No, I never saw him before in my life.
Don't lie, Jeannie.
I swear I don't know who he is.
And why did you run from him? What happened in San Francisco, Jean?
Nothing.
Why is Fillmore Street so important to you?
It isn't.
Why are you afraid?
I'm not afraid. Nothing happened in San Francisco. Nothing, do you hear? That guy who came in tonight was only another dirty masher, and I felt so rotten I just couldn't take it anymore. Now leave me alone, will you? Oh, Dave, I'm sorry.
Okay, Jeannie. Okay. I guess we're both on edge, that's all. You're not going anywhere tonight. I'll put this stuff back in the closet where it belongs, and then you're going to bed and get a good night's rest. And maybe you'll feel better in the morning. Maybe everything will look different when the sun comes up. But I knew it wouldn't. I knew nothing would be different. Because when I went over to the window to pull down the blind, I saw the same big guy standing under a lamppost across the street, watching our apartment. The next morning, I made Jeannie promise to stay inside and keep the door locked. It was Tuesday and the lunchroom was closed, but I had to go down and work on the books, so I left. I'd gone about three blocks when I first noticed him. That same big guy. I don't know where he picked me up, but he was there following me. I decided to play a hunch when I saw the police station. I thought I could bluff him. He was only a few steps behind me as I crossed the street. I ran up the station steps and in the door, but he wasn't bluffed one inch. And we walked side by side right up to the sergeant's desk.
Morning, gentlemen. Now, what can I do for you?
Well, I was...
Well, what is it? What's on your mind?
Look, can you tell me where I go to get a building permit?
Sure, City Hall at 4th and Main. You know where that is?
Yeah, thanks.
You, sir?
Nothing, Sergeant. I'm just here with my friend, Dave. You're gonna do a little building, are you, Dave?
What do you want?
I just want to be sure I got the right party.
What do you want?
Was Gene up in San Francisco last week?
Hey, who are you? What are you after?
My name's Ragnar, Dave. Bert Ragnar. I was in San Francisco last week, and I found this.
What? What is that?
Yeah. A little anklet. Slave bracelet, they call it, don't they? I found it in a hotel on Fillmore Street. And I just wanted to see it returned to its proper owner. It's inscribed. Says... To Jeannie, with all my love, Dave.
Give me that.
Wait just a minute. Can you positively identify it?
Well, the clasp was broken once. It's been soldered.
Here you are, Dave. You'll see that Jeannie gets it, won't you? I'll be seeing you, Dave.
I got a terrible sinking feeling inside then, as if it were already too late, as if I knew already how it would end. I started to run after Ragnar, to beat some answers out of him, but
He was gone. I turned around and went back to the apartment instead.
Dave, you're back so soon. Is everything all right?
I've got something of ours, Jean.
What?
This. It's that little anklet you used to wear. Here.
Where did you get this?
That guy gave it to me, the big guy.
The one who came in last night?
That's right. His name is Ragnar. He says he found it last week in San Francisco.
What did you tell him? What did you say to him, Dave?
I identified it, and he returned it to me.
You identified it for him? Oh, you fool, you blind, stupid fool, Dave. Why did you claim it?
Because it's the one I gave you. Why shouldn't I identify it?
Oh, you idiot.
Tell me what you've done that makes me such a fool for claiming my own property.
No.
Now tell me what happened in San Francisco.
No,
Jean, tell me.
I killed a man.
Jeannie.
Last week in a hotel on Fillmore Street. He was rotten. He deserved it. He was mean and vicious, and he wouldn't leave me alone. And he was crazy jealous.
Jealous?
I tried to get away from him, but he followed me. And then there was a fight, and somehow I got his gun, and I shot him with it. Then I ran, and I got away. I didn't think anybody saw me. I didn't even miss the slave bracelet until the next day, and Dave, what are we going to do?
Do? I don't know.
Dave, do you think Ragnar saw what I did? Do you think...
He knows all about it, believe me. You can count on that.
Who is he? What does he want?
You're lying again, Jeannie. Don't you know?
I swear I never saw him before in my life. What if he's a cop? Dave, what do we do if he's a cop?
Now, listen, Jeannie, there's no...
Let's get out of here. Let's leave now, right away, while we've still got a chance. Dave, don't answer it. Dave, please.
We have to, Jeannie. Well?
Why, Mr. Kimball, is something wrong?
Oh, it's you, Mr. Meade.
You opened that door like you expected the devil himself to be standing here. You know, usually it's the tenants that don't pay their rent that look at me like that. Oh, how do you do, Mrs. Kimball? Sure is nice to have you back. Did you enjoy your trip? Excuse me, folks. It's about the garbage chute. The man's complaining the tin cans are getting at the garbage again.
Yeah. We'll watch it, Mr. Meade. We'll be careful.
Thank you. Well, I'm sure it's not you anyway, but... Well, goodbye, Mr. King.
I thought it was him. I thought it was Ragnar. Oh, Dave, what if he's with the police?
Stop crying, Jean. That won't help.
Do you think he is, Dave? Do you think he's a cop?
I don't know. He doesn't act like one exactly, but he's sure not afraid of him. Listen, Jeannie, if it was self-defense, maybe we ought to... Hello?
This is Bert Ragnar, Dave. I suppose you've been talking things over with Jean. Well, now I guess it's about time for us all to get together and decide what's to be done.
Listen, Ragnar.
Now, you listen, Dave. You listen. I got a room at the Claremont Arms Hotel. You know where that is? It's a walk-up about 5 blocks from your place.
I know where it is.
All right. You and Jeannie be over there at 8 o'clock. Room 212. I'll be expecting you, Dave, so don't try to leave town or anything stupid like that. Don't disappoint me, Dave.
We'll be there, Ragnar. Both of us. At 8.
Ah, you're right on time. Come in. Want to sit down?
No, thanks.
We're all right.
Okay, I'll be brief. I'm a private detective, and not a very prosperous one, but I got a break last week. I was in the next room in that hotel on Fillmore, and I heard the whole business through my open window.
Are you going to go to the police?
That depends entirely on you. You see, I make my living on other people's trouble. And, baby, you're in trouble. If the San Francisco cops ever get a line on you, you haven't got a chance.
What do you want us to do?
Get to the point, Ragnar.
You keep your shirt on. I'll get there. Right now, the police are stuck. They don't even have a lead. If I should come in with the killer, it'd put me right up there in the big time. So if I don't turn you in,
It's got to be made worth my while.
Why, you dirty rat.
Hey. Don't crowd me, fella. I warn you. My price is $10,000.
$10,000?
That's it. So think it over. Only don't think too long, because you've only got until midnight. Now get out.
Jeannie and I walked out of Ragnar's room and all the five blocks back to our apartment without speaking a word to each other. I glanced at her face once as we passed a streetlight. She looked sick. The fear in her eyes was ugly. That must have shocked me hard, because I began really to think then, clearly, for the first time since Jeannie'd come back. And when we got home and the door was closed, I knew what I was going to do.
We can raise the money, can't we, Dave? $10,000 isn't so much, is it? We can get it someplace, can't we, Dave?
No, Jeannie, there's no way on earth for me to get that much money.
But we've got to.
We can't. I went into hock for everything I have. I couldn't touch $10,000. Even if I could, do you think that'd be the end of it? Why, he'd never quit.
But he's going to turn me into the police if we don't pay him the money. You aren't going to let him turn me into the police, are you, Dave? You can't. I love you, and they'll take me away from you.
You really love me, Jean.
Oh, yes, yes. I've always loved you, Dave. I was wrong before, honest. Oh, Dave, don't let him turn me in.
I won't, Jeannie. Don't worry anymore. Ragnar won't turn you in.
Then you're going to pay him off, Dave?
No, I'm not going to pay him. Not in money, anyway. Jeannie, listen. Listen closely. I'm going out now to see Ragnar. You stay in the apartment, do you hear? And when I come back, if anybody should ask you, to swear I was here with you all the time, that I never left. Do you understand?
Oh, David.
I'm going now. And don't forget what I said.
I'll get it, Dave. Hello? Ragnar? Oh, David, Ragnar.
Lie to him. Stall him. Tell him I'm out getting the money and I'll be in his room in half an hour.
Hello? Dave is out getting the money now, and he'll be up at your room in a half an hour. That's right.
As she lied to Ragnar, setting him up for me like a clay pigeon, I got a smashing impulse to hurry and get it over with. And maybe that was the mistake, because I moved too fast. I went to the lunchroom, and in the dark got the pistol I kept under the counter. That took 20 minutes. It only took me 10 more to get to him. Nobody saw me go into his hotel, and nobody saw me walk down the hall to his room. And then, there it was, his door. I was scared of Ragnar. That's why I had the gun out before I knocked. I already had the gun pointed as I heard the footsteps inside. That's why I was already squeezing the trigger as the door swung back. The sound of that shot slammed into my brain. I dropped the gun and ran, because I knew that that murder, too, was a mistake, a monstrous mistake. And that's why I'd come here now to this elegant place to see Jeannie, because the sound of that shot still echoed in my mind, although 24 hours had passed. That's why I was following Mr. Mundy down the silent corridor. I had to see Jeannie once more and tell her about the mistake.
Here you are, sir. In here.
Thank you. Hello, Jeannie. Well, Jeannie, the police have already caught Ragnar. He's told them the whole story by now. They'll get me when I leave here. It was a mistake, Jeannie, a bad mistake. You see, I forgot that blackmailers always protect themselves. And that's what you found out. That's why Ragnar called our apartment just as I was leaving, to tell us he had written a letter about the whole thing to be forwarded to the police in case anything happened to him. That's why you tried to stop me from killing him. Why you went to Ragnar's room and waited for me. That's why you opened the door. But I'm not sorry it turned out this way, Jeannie. This way, I did it by mistake. Someday, I would have done it anyhow, deliberately. You see, Jeannie, the biggest mistake of all was my falling in love with you in the first place.
meant to tell you. So, goodbye, Jeannie.
Mr. Kimball, are you going to leave now?
Yes, Mr. Mundy.
Well, good night, sir.
Good night.
Hello, the Hillcrest Mortuary. Mr. Mundy speaking.
But it's true. A person can get so tired he can't do his work well, can't even get any fun out of life. Now, if you're that tired and pale besides, your doctor may find you have a borderline anemia resulting from a ferronutritional blood deficiency. Then take ironized yeast tablets. They help increase your strength, regain your color by building up your red blood cells. So take ironized yeast tablets to get the energy you need to work, to play, to think. Ironized yeast tablets.
Be with us next week when the Mystery Theater presents The Inescapable Corpse, starring Henry Morgan.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
The Mole Mystery Theater on Tuned 2 yesterday from April 30th, 1948 on NBC. And with cases closed, that's it for this hour of crime on Tuned 2 yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden years. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for listening.